welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Mary Beth Clementi, and I'm the host of this talk show on travel. And this week, I have Dennis Heiss in the studio. I can say he has been a long-time part-time resident of Telluride with a very full presence. He is a fellow ski instructor at Telluride Ski and Snowboard School. And both of us are here taping this show having just completed the season, and we are a little bit weary. However, we'll try not to convey our fatigue during this interview. I wanted to interview Dennis. He does something really very fun and interesting during the summer season. And actually, that's the case with most of the ski and snowboard instructors in Telluride. There's a flip side, and they take on a whole other life. Many of them are guides. In my case, I take on my writer's life that I sort of abandoned during the winter season. And everybody's going here, there, the other place. Some people stay in Telluride. Some people go on the other side of the world to teach skiing. Some people might go to Durango and do something really fun and interesting. And that's actually the case for Dennis Heiss. And I would like to welcome Dennis to Travel Fun.
Thank you, Mary Beth.
Hi, Dennis. Before I keep people in suspense, let's tell them right off that you are involved with an outfitter in Durango.
That's right. We do horseback trips into the Wiminutch Wilderness.
Wow, that just makes me dream right away. It's something I would love to do. And the name of the outfitter is Over the Hill Outfitters outside of Durango. And let's first talk about your time in Telluride real briefly.
Sure.
You've been a ski instructor for how long?
I've been here in Telluride, I think this was my 16th year as an instructor here.
And you and your lovely wife, Joanna, are both instructors and certainly top instructors. Since I've done some training with you and really enjoyed it and learned a lot.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate it. So you definitely have that guide personality. I think that's a character trait of many of the instructors in Telluride. We're guides, cheerleaders. We help people along, show them how to do things, whether it's on the snow or in your case, on horses. So talk about that. How many years have you been guiding outside of Durango?
Well, I've been guiding with our outfit now for about 17 years, somewhere in there. I started just on a whim. I'd moved out here from the east, never ridden a horse before in my life, and heard that Randy and Terry were looking for a guide. And I had a lot of outdoor experience, backpacking and stuff, guiding that in college and stuff, and decided, what, I live out west, I might as well learn how to ride a horse.
I love that. That's excellent. So how long did it take you to learn how to ride a horse properly, I should say?
Properly? Oh, quite a while. Same as ski. It's funny how it's almost exactly like skiing, but yeah, it took a while.
And why is it so similar to skiing?
Movement, you know, how you sit on a horse, you stand on a pair of skis the same way, really. The horse moves, the skis move underneath you. So it's they only have their own personality, where skis don't particularly have their own. But and that's real similar.
Finding your balance point so that gravity doesn't pull you down.
It, very much so. Yeah, very much so.
So I just, you know, I'm envisioning a wonderful western landscape because the Wiminutch Wilderness is really quite lovely. I've only gone into parts of it very briefly. Why don't you first talk about that area and what it's like, and for those who have never been there?
Oh, well, the Wiminutch is of course, a wilderness area. It's the largest continuous wilderness area in the lower 48. It stretches from Durango to Bogosa all the way to Silverton. So it's a huge amount of acres. We, of course, only have a small part of that, what's known as the Florida drainage. But it's one of the prettier parts, if I have to say.
When you say you only have a small part of that, is that the part that you access?
Yeah, that's the part we are permitted to access. Yes.
Okay. And how would you define a wilderness area?
Well, it's defined as a, there can be no mechanized transport, no mechanized machines, no anything with wheels. You know, we have to, everything has to go in by horse or hand or foot, and all work done there is all by hand saws and stuff. We can't take a chainsaw in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there could be nothing that's motorized or mechanized. Mountain bikes are not allowed there. So that's kind of just to keep it pure wilderness. And that's a national designation.
And how many designated wilderness areas are there in the U.S.?
Boy, that's a good question that I'm not even going to try to answer.
Right, but the...
I mean, there's a few. There's quite a few. A lot of them are just smaller. This one happens to be very large because of the continuous acres. I believe Lizard Head is part wilderness as well.
So tell me about one of your typical trips, although typical is probably a stretch to say. I'm sure they're all different, but how does it happen? How many people do you bring? And
well, you know, it's they're all typical in that ski instruction is typical, although they're never typical because we deal with clients or visitors, you know,
right.
People on vacation. So that's always so much fun. That's why I love to teach. A typical trip for us will last 5 days. That's our trip. Everybody meets at the ranch, and the ranch is down outside of Durango. Terry, the owner, one of the owners, also breeds quarter horses, and so he has quite a spread, about 180 head of horses or so. So we'll meet there where we pack up, meet the guests, pack up. You know, the cook packs the lunch and everything, and we get their luggage. We sort it all out by weight. It all has to be very carefully packed on the horses and the mules, so that the load stays balanced all the way in. So there's a process of weighing everybody's luggage, and, you know, of course we have to take beer in and all that.
And you must stipulate ahead of time what sort of luggage to bring. I don't imagine somebody has a Louis Vuitton hardtop.
Unfortunately, it's surprising some of the luggage we've been asked to take in, you know, the wheeled hard cases
from
the airport. You know, we limit them to 48 pounds, and we're pretty flexible, but we prefer that they don't have much. And the soft duffel bag type stuff is much easier to pack than the hard-sided wheeled cases they came out of the airport with. But, you know, it's amazing what you can pack on a horse. If for those who've done it for a long time, I've been pretty amazed.
I'm sure the reason why I say that with such conviction is I have been to places such as Morocco and gone through the Medina, the old market area, and seen donkeys loaded down with, you know, TVs and all kinds of things. So yeah, those poor beasts, you can really pack a lot.
Oh my gosh. Just look at some of our mining history, some of the pictures at the museum and stuff.
Right.
Some of the things they've packed, it's like, wow, it's mind-boggling.
So you get everybody squared away. How many people do you typically bring on a trip?
We can only take, we can take up to 8 people, because then there'll be 2 other guides and a cook. We're limited by heartbeats by the National Forest Service, and a heartbeat is a horse or a person. So we're limited to 25 heartbeats. So we have to, if we take 8 people, well, there's 8 horses, there's 16 heartbeats already, plus your guides and their horses. And then it takes usually 5 or 6 pack horses to get a big load in. So personally, I like to take 4 to 6 people. We don't have to like cram or worry about, having to take an extra horse. So it's our typical trip is 4 to 6.
And are these usually people that know each other that come together, or?
You know, it's a mix. We've taken whole families out. We've done custom trips. We've done totally mixed trips where there's, you know, a person from Germany, we've had Australian, woman and, or there could be a family, of two or three and then a few other people mixed in. You never really kind of know, you know, you get some people who love to ride horses. You get some people that want to go back there just to fish or even hike once they get back there. They just soon never sit on a horse again once they get in there. So it's a real interesting, combination of people.
It's always different.
Always. Yeah. We do a couple specialty trips, a few specialty trips throughout the year, and then your group will be able to have more in common. Like we do a photographing trip with Greg Morona, and then, we do a backcountry, riding clinic with, Craig Cameron.
Okay.
He's a pretty famous horse trainer, whisperer guy. We work with him a lot. And those are specialty trips.
Right. So how long does it take you to ride into the wilderness? Because it sounds as though maybe you go in, you set up camp, then you do things from there. Is that a...
Well, we have camp preset. We go in the summer. We'll be going in here. Well, this year we probably won't be able to get in there till near the end of June because of snow. You know, the camp sits at 10.5, and we ride up over areas of 11,000 feet. So, you know, we have to wait till the snow gets down to a certain level where we can get a horse through the snowbanks, or we go in with shovels, and we've been known to have to dig our way in, you know, 20, 30 yards here and there to get in. We'll set up the camps. The camp, and then that camp stays up then all summer through the fall. And then so then all we have to do is ride in with food, people's personal belongings, and that kind of thing. So that
and
helps.
And the people.
And then, of course, the people, yeah.
And so how far in is the camp?
The camp is, when we leave the ranch, it's about a 45-minute trip by trailer to the trailhead. And then, which sits just outside of Lemon Reservoir out of Durango. And then we go in, and it takes between 5.5 to 6 hours to get into camp. It's about 13 miles, plus or minus. And, you know, with breaks, when we have clients, you know, we take breaks and that. If I was just going to ride in myself, it'd probably take us 3.5 or 4.
So it's a pretty full day.
It's a big day.
Adventuring in there.
The first day is a big day.
Especially if you haven't spent a whole lot of time on a horse.
Which is, several of our clients are always that way, yeah. And there's no reason to get on a horse again once you're in there, if you don't want to. They can just hike from there. The camp is on the headwaters of the Florida River, and it's just gorgeous. It's in a kind of a private hanging valley that's right out of an Old West novel. And then with 12,000, 13,000 foot mountains all around it, it's a pretty special place.
That's what you call getting away from it all.
Very much so. There's a lot of times we're kind of off the beaten track of the Vallecito backpacking route into Chicago Basin. So we can be in there for a week, and if we see three people, we've seen a lot, or four. So it's pretty private. It's usually just us.
Right. And that means you have to be very self-sufficient.
Yeah. Well, when you have horses and coolers, you can take in a lot of self-sufficiency.
Right. Right. Now, so of course, people disconnect there. They don't have TV. They don't have cell phone, internet, any of that. And I'm sure, you know, most people just kind of breathe a sigh of relief and love it. But then you probably have other people that makes them a little bit crazy.
It's kind of interesting, especially the first day, because people pull up and, of course, they start whipping their cell phones out. And at the ranch, you can get a signal. But then after that, once we leave the ranch, you really are pretty much no signals. But they'll want to wear their cell phone anyway. they all have it on their belts and stuff. And we say, well, you know, I know where some of the signals are, and we're only going to be there for a minute or two. So you're not going to be able to use that. The nearest cell phone signal from camp itself is about a 40, 45 minute horse ride away. So nobody really, they might as well just put it away.
Right.
But they like to wear it anyway. I think it's a comfort thing nowadays.
Interesting. So tell us some anecdotes about life on the trail, whether it's people kind of discovering a new part of themselves, being out in the wilderness, or people maybe being challenged physically or mentally, or what goes on? Because it's like, you know, their opportunity to become a whole different person, in a sense, I would think.
It pretty much is. Yeah, you're right. It's interesting. Of course, the first hour or so in, we're chit-chatting a lot on the horses. We usually have the guide with a pack string is up front, and then the clients are all trailing behind, and there'll be the cook is back there mixing in, and if we take another guide in with us, and he's back there, so there's a lot of conversation going along the trail. You know, people getting to know each other. They ask about the horses. They ask about the trail itself. Pretty much right when we go in, about a 3/4 mile in, is this really narrow, very narrow, very steep, pure rock bench that we have to go up. It's kind of like this choke, and I mean, it's literally 3 feet across, and the walls on each side are 4 or 5 feet. So the horse has to kind of clamber up that, and it's always interesting to see people's eyes when we have to go up that. we've never lost a horse there or a client or anything. I mean, the horses have been up and down that thing countless times. And the horses are surprisingly sure-footed out there. But it's always interesting to see the people going, oh, my God.
It's sort of the first opportunity to really trust.
Yeah, because they have to, and you tell them, you know, you give the horse their head and trust, let him pick the route and hang on to the saddle horn or just kind of hang on with your knees and help him, but let him go. It's hard for people to give up control, to give themselves to, what, a, you know, 1,200-pound animal that they don't know. They've been on a whole 10 minutes so far.
Right.
So it's pretty interesting. You watch their faces and their reaction.
You haven't had anybody freak out and say, okay, the trip stops here?
No, we haven't ever had anybody do that. I'm trying to think. I think we've had one or two people who've decided to walk up it. It's only about 20 yards up. So every now and then you'll get somebody who wants to walk, which is just fine. But really they pretty much kind of cowboy up, so to speak, and let the horse go. So it's pretty good.
Yep. Right. And a lot of it has to do with trusting you. It's like when you're instructing and you take somebody on some terrain and they're not sure about, but you know that they can do it, and kind of coaching them through it.
Yeah, exactly. It's very similar to that. You know, of course, we've been up it hundreds of times, as much as the horses have. So we all know that everybody handles it just fine. But they do put a lot of faith in you on there. And then especially once you hit the wilderness sign and they know that they are, you know, hours from any place. I think to hike in from the nearest road is 3 hours to where our camp is on foot. So it's kind of out there.
Right. I am visiting with Dennis Heiss, and Dennis is a ski instructor at the Telluride Ski and Snowboard School. And in the summer, he is a guide with Over the Hill Outfitters in Durango. And we're talking about his upcoming summer activities and how it is to guide. Dennis, let's talk about the whole idea of guiding people in general. Because certainly, as I said, being a ski instructor, you're part guide. There's, you know, also, I'm sure, instruction involved in what you're doing when you're out on the trail in the Wiminooch Wilderness, whether it's showing somebody how to fish or whatever you might have going on, and if they want to help you do something in the woods, pitch a tent or whatever. What is it that you like about guiding?
Guiding, teaching. I think what I really like about it is being able to share some knowledge that I've gotten over the years. Being able to play with people a little bit. I love to always kind of throw a little BS out there, both skiing and riding around. Or
I didn't know that about you.
You got to throw a little bit of stuff out. You know, one of the first things we tell them is if they're going to die out there, lay over a log so that when they stiffen up, you know, we can get them over a horse and pack them out. That's one of the rules we give them right away. So it's fun interacting with people and showing them, which is one of the arguably the most beautiful part of the whole United States, is right here in our little neck of the woods. And they're pretty amazed. Some people have never been in the mountains, real mountains. And we get to take them in there firsthand, you know, whether it's on skis and we can take them up to the top of 14, or I get to ride them up and we ride our horses. We literally ride horses like we're riding up to Mount Quail. I'd have no problem taking a horse up that. and that's the kind of terrain we're riding around in once we get in there. So, you know, I think that's what it's all about. It's just sharing what we love and making them jealous.
Well, there's no doubt that people love to feel a part of what we have here, whether it's in Telluride or out on the trail, and, you know, whether it's picking up a little bit of the lingo.
Oh, definitely.
Or I guess it's embracing the lifestyle.
I think it's both. It's, you know, being, you know, how many of us have grown up looking at cowboy movies and wishing we were on the trail? I mean, you know, as a kid, of course, I was always into Rin Tin Tin and Roy Rogers and all of that, you know, or girls love horses, you know, so it's like this is your inner cowboy coming out.
Right, your inner cowboy.
And, you know, we talk a lot about the horses and what they can do, and we let them wander around a little bit if they want. Once we get into camp, we can just take trips that don't involve trails, so we can just kind of wander off trail and let them kind of discover what it's like to ride a horse in the wilderness. I mean, there's been a few times we go up and we ride on these treeless mesas up at around 11 to 12,000 feet that go on for miles. And I think I've been up there hundreds of times. I'm not sure I've ever gone really the same way twice. You kind of wander along, and I've gotten, you know, I've had to back up and backtrack because I've been cliffed out, or there's a blowdown where you can't get through. And it's kind of like you tell them, say, well, you know, I've never been this way before, but we're going to give it a try. And they kind of think that's pretty cool.
Right.
As long as I bring them back to camp.
Yeah, absolutely. So it goes well beyond the campfire moments. You're really out there exploring with the people.
Yeah. I think that's what I still enjoy about it. And they love it.
The adventure of it.
The adventure, because up there, of course, this is such huge mining history. We're coming across glory holes everywhere. You know, there's even one old mine that we can ride to. But there's these, you'll come across this hole that's 10 foot in diameter and maybe 20 feet deep. You know, and you say, oh, there's another glory hole. And that's where miners would think that there was gold there. And they'd start digging.
That's what a glory hole is.
They'd start digging in that spot and, you know, hope they hit glory,
right,
and get the
right
gold. And a lot of them don't pan out. They have to go and start over elsewhere. But
go to the next place. I am visiting with Dennis Heiss, and we're talking about his summer job guiding people in the Wiminooch Wilderness with Over the Hill Outfitters just outside of Durango. Dennis, do you have anything you'd like to add? Maybe a story that you're just dying to share?
There's a lot of small anecdotes. You know, it's just funny because, like in teaching, it's these little things happen that just bring a smile to your face. It's hard to pick any. I know we've had some pretty interesting fireside chats. You know, we get a little, maybe a little fire water out and have that. And
oh, you bring fire water well, along in, you know, addition to the beer. Yeah, that's easier to carry than
it's
beer.
A Western thing.
Absolutely.
You got to have your whiskey out there.
Yeah.
We've had some interesting conversations around a fire. Or people then end up hearing a pack of coyotes off in the dark, and that's always kind of that's always good for a laugh or two.
Have you ever had a bear come into the camp?
We have. Yeah, we actually, I think it was my first year or second year of guiding. We had a bear had come in and was bothering the camp for that week, and my wife was on that trip. I was in Durango still, and I know she would have to beat pans to beat the bear off, and Randy was out, and he'd touch off a round or two with his pistol and trying to scare it, and it would go away, and then it'd come back, and it'd go away. And they had to bring the people out. It was coming to the changeover. So they're bringing people out, and there's going to be a day when nobody was in camp before our next trip went in. So I get this phone call in the middle of the week asking if I'll come in and do bear watch for the camp while they're switching out. And so Randy goes, yeah, well, we'll go down, we'll get you a big can of pepper spray, and we'll have, there's a shotgun, I'm having Dad bring a rifle in, so we'll have some guns in here just in case. And so I'm riding in, and I can remember that night. I'm by myself in there, me and my, I had one horse, and I think I was riding Floyd at that time, and we're in just sitting there. Now I'm by myself in camp at night, and of course, every sound is a bear coming into camp.
Right, right.
Fortunately, the bear had decided to head off to other parts
right,
of the woods.
Right, because there probably wasn't as much food around.
But I remember sleeping in the tent that night, and I think I had every firearm within a finger's reach of where I slept. And it was funny just how I reacted to that.
Having an experience like that, yeah. Well, that's life out on the trail, I guess.
It is life on the trail.
Life on the trail. Well, Dennis, I wish you many happy adventures this summer. Have a great time doing it.
Well, and thank you.
Yeah. I am going to be posting this interview as a podcast at my blog with hopefully some photos of the wilderness and maybe you out on the trail. And my blog is bonjourcolorado.com. And Dennis, thank you very much for being a guest on Travel Fun.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Come to Durango and I'll take you out on a all-day ride.
Ooh, sounds like fun. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Deep in the west, where the tall mountains grow, I've gone home. Where the heavens above turns red from the fire down below. Are you listening to me when I'm talking to you? Said together we're one, divided we're divided with
you. Silver friend that night, yellow friend, you come with the dawn. Back in my heart, I've been drying my eyes. See me run. So you hang on to me, and I'll hang on to you. Said together we're one, divine.